increased diplomatic ties between China and Latin America. So it'll be short-term dominance and control for a long-term loss of influence and power.
We only have about 30 seconds, but the constant use of the United States, the war on drugs as a means to impose its will on Latin America?
Yeah, the war on drugs, since President Nixon declared it back in 1972, has been a monumental failure. It's a very simple law of supply and demand. You attack supply, whether you're sinking drug boats in the Caribbean or you're trying to fumigate, defoliate crops in the hills. So when you attack supply, all you do is you reduce supply, you raise price, and that's incentive for growers to produce more drugs. And the logic of that has produced a tenfold increase in the supply of illicit narcotics since the drug war began over 50 years ago. So it's what I call the stimulus of prohibition.
Alfred McCoy, we're going to have to leave it there, but I'm going to encourage people to read your article and your new book. History professor, University of Wisconsin-Madison, his first book, Politics of Heroin, CIA Complicity in the Global Drug Trade. His new book is Cold War on Five Continents. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to Spill
on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO Zine, The Boo Beat, is back with a second issue featuring KBOO's program guide, interviews with local activists and community members, spotlights on local businesses, on-the-ground reporting, and fun quizzes and crosswords. Our zine has its finger on the pulse of Portland, and you won't want to miss it. To snag your copy, visit kboo.fm/zine. In partnership with the World Arts Foundation, KBOO presents a live broadcast of Keep Alive the Dream from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the Life Change Church in Portland. The annual tribute to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebrates his legacy through community, reflection, and highlighting Black achievement. Information is available at worldartsfoundation.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Supreme Court hears a case on trans student athletes. Immigration lawyers seek to block warrantless ICE arrests. And in international news, public opinion polls in 24 countries show significant declines in how people view the U.S. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, January 13th, 2026. I'm Josh Salem. OHSU has stopped gender-affirming surgeries for patients under 19. The Trump administration just signed an executive order to stop providing federal funding for gender-affirming care for patients under that age. Proponents of gender-affirming care say these treatments can be life-saving for trans teens, who are often at higher risk for suicide than their peers. Opponents say teens are not mature enough to make these decisions for themselves. OHSU said this would not have an immediate effect on patient care, but there has not been an operation on a patient under 19 since March of 2025. OHSU spokesperson Sarah Hotman said in an email, quote, "At this time, OHSU does not have the surgical care team available to provide gender-affirming surgeries to patients younger than 19. Consequently, we have paused scheduling surgeries for this patient population," end quote. The decision happened quietly, and OHSU told reporters at Willamette Week that the federal restrictions had influenced the decision. OHSU still provides other gender-affirming services to patients under 19, including hormone replacement therapy and puberty blockers. The Trump administration has threatened to withhold federal funding from hospitals or medical schools that continue to provide gender-affirming care for minors. Transgender rights advocates are rallying outside the U.S. Supreme Court today in support of trans student athletes as the court considers whether state bans on such athletes violate the 14th Amendment. Zimon Perez has more.
Advocates for transgender student athletes are rallying outside the U.S. Supreme Court today as the court hears a challenge to state bans on such athletes. The case, Little v. Hecox, challenges bans on transgender female student athletes in West Virginia and Idaho, arguing they violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. That clause grants all people protection under the law and has been the basis of major court rulings regarding segregation, gay marriage, and gender discrimination. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin spearheaded national efforts to bar transgender women from sports, and 27 states now enforce bans on trans student athletes. Mariah Moore, with the Transgender Law Center, says the court's decision will likely leave hefty implications for civil rights in its wake.
The stakes are really high, and I think that this ruling could potentially impact civil rights across many areas of public life for trans people, and not just in sports. So this could determine whether trans people are protected under the 14th Amendment.
Supporters of these bans argue trans women have a biological competitive advantage when participating in women's sports. They argue those differences threaten fair competition in women's sports, but researchers caution there is little consistent or definitive scientific evidence to support such a claim. Moore argues that politicians have worked to sensationalize the issue to push other parts of their agendas, given the rarity of transgender children playing sports at all. For example, in 2024, the NCAA said of more than 500,000 college athletes around the country, fewer than 10 were transgender. Moore urges people to find common ground to achieve actual solutions that uplift trans children.
This is not something that we're seeing in many states, in many schools, in many colleges. You know, these are just kids that want to play, and very few number of kids that actually just want to play sports.
Trans rights advocates will be joined by teammates, coaches, and families of transgender student athletes at the rally. A ruling on the case is expected later this spring. I'm Zimon Perez, Virginia News Connection.
Immigrant rights attorneys in Oregon are suing Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, to stop them from making warrantless arrests. The preliminary injunction was filed by Innovation Law Lab in the U.S. District Court in Eugene. If the judge grants the injunction, Oregon would become the third place to block ICE from making warrantless arrests. That's already the case in Washington, D.C. and Colorado. ICE arrested roughly 10 times more people in Oregon in 2025 than they did the year before, according to the Oregon Capital Chronicle. The lawyers are representing two people detained by ICE without a warrant. One, a farm worker in Woodburn who was ripped out of a van by ICE on her way to work. Another is a construction worker in Hillsboro who was stopped by ICE and detained at the ICE facility in Tacoma for 3 weeks, even though he showed agents his work permit. In the court documents, he describes, quote, "I am the wage earner in my family, and my inability to work has impacted us greatly. My wife and I have a lot of fear that ICE will arrest and detain me again. We are afraid even to go to the grocery store. I have started seeing a therapist to help me manage the fear and anxiety this event has caused me," end quote. Innovation Law Lab is also part of another case, Clear Clinic versus Nome, which is seeking to block ICE from transferring people out of state before they can talk to a lawyer. Oregon's postal workers are calling for recent changes at the USPS to be revoked and for decades-long service standards to be restored. Though the latest changes at USPS are expected to add to the mail slowdown, the union says they have faith that Oregon will be able to keep the mail-in ballot system functioning. Isabel Charlet has more.
The American Postal Worker Union has released a statement opposing recent changes to the U.S. Postal Service and calling for more transparency. The USPS has ended the practice of transporting nearly all collected mail to processing facilities on the same day. Now, especially in rural areas, much of the mail is not processed until the next morning or after several days if collected before a weekend or holiday. Daniel Cortez with the Oregon Postal Workers Union says while the slowdown presents many problems, it is too soon to tell how it will impact Oregon's elections.
We've been doing vote by mail since the beginning, and I have faith in Oregon's ability to figure this out. I worry about what this means for the rest of the country.
Cortez advises people who are sending time-sensitive mail, especially from outside of city centers, to hand the letter directly to a window clerk and ask for a postmark to guarantee it gets one the same day. Cortez says the latest changes are part of a pattern and that the USPS has deliberately been slowing down mail delivery for the last decade. He says the union is calling for the previous standards to be restored, when mail was rarely barely sitting for more than a few hours.
The American people need to be able to rely on their mail getting where it needs to go, whether it's prescriptions for our seniors and veterans, whether it's a birthday card from grandparents, or, of course, ballots.
Cortez explains the USPS has also closed regional processing centers in the state, so now most of the mail in Oregon needs to pass through Portland, contributing to the slowdown. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The Multnomah County Health Department has instituted a wood-burning ban because of poor air quality. The National Weather Service first issued an air stagnation advisory last Friday, and it's expected to last through this Friday. With light winds and little movement in the air, pollutants will be kept closer to the ground where people breathe. Wood smoke would add to the issue, so the county has a burn ban in place until the advisory is lifted. Recreational fires and backyard burning are banned for the time being. That includes fireplaces, wood stoves, and fire pits. It does not include wood used for cooking. People whose houses are heated by wood fires are exempt, as are people who make more than 60% of Oregon's median income. If there's a power outage, there's also a ban exemption. The county says even healthy people can be impacted by poor air quality, so it's best to keep indoor air clean, reduce activity, and skip the fire. Donald Trump backs claims a slain Minnesota protester was connected to a left-wing network. Minneapolis sues to block a surge of federal agents. And Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell responds to an administration investigation of him and the Fed. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
In my opinion, she was an agitator, a very high-level agitator, so professional, she wouldn't stop screaming. I said, this isn't a normal situation. This is a professional troublemaker.
President Donald Trump is backing claims that Renee Nicole Good was part of a left-wing attack on federal agents. Good was in her car, unarmed, near a Minneapolis immigration raid when she was killed by an ICE officer. The administration calls her a domestic terrorist, saying she ran over a federal agent, but cell phone videos show her moving away from officers when shot with several bullets going through the driver's side window. Window, not the front windshield. Despite growing backlash, the administration is sending several hundred more agents to Minnesota. The state's Attorney General Keith Ellison says he's suing to stop what he calls an invasion.
We asked the courts to end the DHS unlawful behavior in our state. The intimidation, the threats, the violence. We asked the courts to end the tactics on our places of worship, our schools, our courts, our marketplaces, our hospitals, and even funeral homes.
Even rural parts of the state are on edge. Joan Ellison, no relation, lives in the resort and farming town of Pelican Rapids. She says some are troubled by the newcomers, but the town made a conscious decision to welcome people who are proving to be the good employees and small business owners they need.
They are well respected in the community. They are integrated into all parts of life in the community, and the community has worked hard to make them feel welcome.
Reports say ICE is violating its own rules by separating families during deportation. Under current policy, ICE must allow parents to decide what happens to their children. But Zane Lakhani with the Women's Refugee Commission says most deported parents aren't being allowed to take their kids with them or arrange their care.
We spoke with dozens and dozens of parents who are coming off the plane, some inconsolable because they did not know where their children are, the vast majority of whom had never been asked if they had children at the time that they were arrested.
The Federal Reserve has been served with subpoenas in a probe into whether Chair Jerome Powell lied to Congress about a long-term headquarters renovation project. In an unusually stark response, Powell calls it part of a pressure campaign by Trump.
This is about whether the Fed will be able to continue to set interest rates based on evidence and economic conditions, or whether instead monetary policy will be directed by political pressure or intimidation.
Several Senate Republicans say Fed independence is crucial for the markets and economy. They're threatening to stall confirmation of any replacement for Powell. White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett is likely to be nominated when Powell's term ends in May. Hassett says the Justice Department just wants transparency.
It seems like the Justice Department has decided they want to see what's going on over there with this building that's massively more expensive than any building in the history of Washington. And if I were Fed Chair, I would want them to do that.
Protests in Iran are escalating quickly, fueled by repression and a poor economy. The Pentagon's reportedly exploring military options, but the White House says the regime is seeking negotiations. Trump says the U.S. will put a 25% tariff on all of Iran's trading partners. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy. with an overnight low of 34 degrees. An air stagnation advisory is in place until 10 p.m. Tomorrow's weather will be partly cloudy with a daytime high of 49. Today in history, on this date in 1990, Douglas Wilder took office as the first African-American governor of an American state in Virginia. The quote of the day is from Douglas Wilder. "My experience politically has always been that one-word definition of politics, money. Keep your eye on the buck, and that tells you where the American people are going to be." Alaska's challenge to a law that protects subsistence hunting and fishing. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The United States Supreme Court has once again declined to take up challenges to a federal law that protects subsistence hunting and fishing in Alaska. The court rejected the state of Alaska's petition to review a federal lawsuit against the state over salmon management on the Kuskokwim River in southwest Alaska. KMBA's Rhonda McBride has more.
The state had argued the federal government was misinterpreting a law Congress passed to protect a rural priority for subsistence. Last year, after the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals sided with federal fishery managers, the state asked the Supreme Court to take up the case. But in a court docket on Monday, the Supreme Court denied the state's petition. The Alaska Federation of Natives hailed the decision. Its president, Ben Malott, says decades of hard-won protections under the landmark Katie John lawsuits were also on the line.
I feel relieved that we don't have to spend our limited resources and efforts fighting for what we know is right. Hopefully, our final time protecting what Katie John fought for.
John was an Otna Athabascan elder who fought for the right to fish on rivers that flow through federal lands. This is the third time the Supreme Court has decided to let Katie John litigation stand untouched. Alaska's Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang said in a statement that the state will respect the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court to not address legal issues regarding fish and game management authorities over navigable waters belonging to the state of Alaska. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Mary Peltola, a Yupik Democrat and the first Alaska Native person elected to Congress, announced Monday that she's running for U.S. Senate, taking on Republican incumbent Dan Sullivan. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Peltola served one partial and one full term in the U.S. House, then narrowly lost her seat in 2024. Her initial campaign videos portrayed her salmon-centered family life on the Kuskokwim River. She talks about the high cost of housing and groceries. She doesn't mention Sullivan by name.
The politicians representing us on Capitol Hill are more interested in appealing to D.C. partisans than to the Alaskans who elected them.
Nationally, Democrats believe that with Peltola on the ballot, Alaska presents one of their best hopes of flipping a Senate seat. Sullivan has already raised $6 million this election cycle. He has President Trump's endorsement and maintains a strong alignment with Trump. The National Republican Senatorial Committee and other groups supporting Sullivan issued a string of press releases. They link her to Joe Biden and other national figures on the left. Some Republican messages hit at her high rate of missed House votes. Peltola tried to head off that last point in her launch video, saying D.C. people were shocked that she went home in July to put up fish for her family. But she says Alaskans understand. For U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, Peltola's candidacy presents a dilemma. They're both moderates, and Murkowski endorsed Peltola in the past, despite their party differences. Thursday, Murkowski said she'd made a decision.
We want to figure out how we're going to keep in the majority, and Dan delivers that.
So you would endorse Dan?
You know, yes, I guess I'm saying that I am endorsing my Republican partner.
I'm Liz Ruskin.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
In the new year, some folks could be looking for ways to manage their finances better. As Eric Tegetoff reports, a few tips could help them achieve their goals this year.
For people who made resolutions to take better care of their finances, a few tips can help them achieve their goals in the new year. First, people should take a look at their budgets. Joe Mecca with the North Carolina-based Coastal Credit Union says this is a good time to make plans for the future.
The start of the year is always the time where things change. You may see some of the things that you pay for on a monthly basis or quarterly basis may have increased in price for this year. Also, tax situations change at the beginning of the year, so even if you didn't see your pay change, what you're taking home may be slightly different than what you're accustomed to.
Mecca says automating as many transactions as possible can help people with their budgets. He adds that folks should look at their retirement plans for potential changes too, such as increased limits for contributions as they age. Mecca suggests people create an emergency fund as well and keep it somewhere accessible, like a savings account. He says a good way to start is to try saving $1,000 for unexpected expenses. Mecca says this is also a good time to strategize on ways to pay down debts.
There's different approaches. Some people like to pay down the highest interest rate debt first and really focus on getting that done. There's other people who like to pay off the smallest balances first to provide a little bit more liquidity in your monthly household budget.
Money management can be stressful, and so Mecca also advises people to take care of themselves. He says folks should work fun into their budget, something inexpensive, like going to dinner or the movies.
Setting aside a little bit of money for enjoyment is advisable, but also you make that a line item. So when you're planning your budget, have a fun budget. Have a line item for money that you set aside for doing things that you enjoy.
For North Carolina News Service, I'm Eric Tegetoff.
A global network of experts at Science Feedback is correcting false claims about climate change and clean energy. Dr. Anthony Leizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. The internet holds vast amounts of trustworthy information on many issues, but also huge volumes of false and misleading content, especially about climate change.
Right now, we are seeing a lot of mis and disinformation about climate solutions, electric vehicles, renewable energy.
Climate scientist Emmanuel Vincent is the founder of Science Feedback. The group includes a network of scientists who review some of the climate-related stories and myths spreading online, such as the false claim that wind turbines do not work in the cold. In fact, they do operate in low temperatures and have systems to prevent ice buildup.
So we have about 500 scientists to help us verify when there is a prominent claim, whether it is true or false, whether it is based on sound science and in agreement with the data. We also go and read the scientific literature.
They summarize their findings in free articles at science.feedback.org. The resources are written for a general audience and include links to other studies and resources that provide more in-depth information. So the initiative provides reliable information about climate change and climate solutions, helping people separate fact from fiction. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Public opinion polls in 24 countries during 2025 show significant declines in U.S. popularity, confidence in U.S. leadership, and views of its economic power. Declines are especially pronounced among democracies and in Latin America. These polls were taken before the Venezuela invasion and threats to Greenland. Now we go to global citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Not that President Trump cares, but in 2025, the reputation of the United States and of its president took a major hit among publics in traditional U.S.-aligned countries and many other countries. To be sure, international affairs is not a popularity contest, and many questions arise about gauging public opinion abroad. Still, the trend out of favor with the United States is hard to dismiss. It was never like this, and with the invasion of Venezuela and threats to acquire Greenland, the United States' reputation is bound to decline even further. The highly reliable Pew Research Center and the Ipsos poll are the chief sources of international opinion polling. Here are their chief findings during 2025, again, before Venezuela and Greenland. First, in general, only about 49% of people surveyed in 24 countries have a favorable view of the United States. 51% do not. There are deep divides between highly negative views of the U.S. held in Canada, Mexico, and parts of Europe, and strongly favorable views in Israel, Poland, and South Korea. Other countries with highly favorable views of the U.S. are Japan, Brazil, South Korea, Kenya, and Nigeria. Low favorability countries include Sweden, Australia, France, Germany, Netherlands, Spain, and Turkey. The overall 49% favorability view is a sharp drop from previous years. Next, confidence in U.S. leadership has plummeted, partly in response to the deep partisan politics in the U.S., and also because of the decline in U.S. reliability among allies. A large majority of the global public, 62%, believes that partisan conflicts within the U.S. are strong or very strong, leading many to conclude that the U.S. is no longer a good model for other democracies to follow. Roughly 50% of people polled say democracy works well, while 46% say it works poorly. The U.S. is considered an ally in 12 of 24 countries surveyed, but in Canada, Mexico, Argentina, Brazil, and Kenya, publics consider the U.S. both the top threat to their country and a reliable ally. People polled in South Africa, Indonesia, and Spain consider the U.S. the gravest threat to their country. China ranks as a major threat to publics in Australia and Japan, as well as an important threat in South Korea, India, and Pakistan. Next, confidence in President Trump to, quote, do the right thing in world affairs remains low, with a median of 62% across 24 countries expressing little to no confidence. When it comes to confidence in Trump's handling of six major international issues, such as immigration, climate change, and U.S.-China relations, majorities in 24 countries expressed lack of confidence on each issue. People in 24 countries were asked also to compare confidence in four world leaders, Trump, Macron of France, Putin of Russia, and Xi of China. Macron received the highest confidence ratings, with a median of 46% expressing confidence in the French leader. Trump is next, with a 34% median confidence rating, followed by 25% for Xi Jinping, and only 16% confidence in Putin. When it comes to world economic leadership, once always attributed to the United States, now challenged by China. The Global South, as China calls the developing world, increasingly sees China as the preeminent economic power. Many European and Latin American countries now view China as the world's leading economic power. So you might say that overall the winner in popularity is China. For the first time in a decade, polling in 100 countries by the Democracy Perception Index indicates that more people view China as a positive influence on world affairs, 49%, than they do the United States at 46%. The United States was far more favorably viewed than China as recently as 2020, according to this poll. But the crossover point came in 2024. China is more popular than the U.S. in Western Europe, Canada, Africa, and large portions of Latin America, whereas the U.S. is more popular than China in Australia, East Asia, Eastern Europe, India, and Brazil. In sum, the verdict of the global public, or at least that part of the public that can be polled, is that the U.S. under Trump is widely disliked. For people who don't think we need the world's favor, this finding doesn't mean much. But loss of reliability and confidence among so many countries, democracies in particular, does count when one wants economic, political, and military cooperation in difficult times. The Trump administration should pay particular attention to Latin America, where his gunboat diplomacy and resumption of U.S. imperialism are likely to arouse hostility in most of the region's people. I'm Mel Gerto for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, January 13th, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Lizard. Their producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Isabel Charlet, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonio Gonzalez, Simone Perez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available at our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
Sequoia Ezekwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO Between the Covers Thursday as we get up close and personal with New York Times bestselling author Jamie Ford.
Can I swear on this show or can I not swear?
In an explosive interview with KBOO Radio, author Jamie Ford makes a bombshell revelation about his book, The Many Daughters of Afan Moy. Mr. Ford, I want to be perfectly clear here. You showed this book to your spouse. She read it. And after she had finished reading it, how exactly did she react?
She's like, F you. She's like, what is wrong with you?
The literary world is speechless. Fans are asking questions. We have the answers. Tune in Thursday at 11 a.m. as Between the Covers reveals the impossible truth. You don't want to miss it. Listener discretion is advised.